One of the biggest mistakes to make about me is that, you know, Father Farrell is tall, therefore he's a good basketball player. It's not true at all. And this is something that any of the kids who go to youth group will tell you. I realized when I showed up at Our Lady of Hope that basketball was a big part of youth group and over at the school. And I hadn't played basketball since about seventh grade, so I went out into the gym when it would be empty over the summer and practiced free throws quite a bit. And I got to where I thought I was pretty good. But of course, the only thing I had to measure it against was how I was doing before, which was terrible. So when school came back into session, I was watching the fourth and fifth graders play basketball, and they broke my record on a daily basis. So I realized that, you know, we're only as good as the person that we're sort of comparing ourselves to. It's always interesting when people come into the confessional and they make the comment, well, I'm a pretty good person. And I always think, well, compared to whom? You know, compared to Joseph Stalin, I'm great. You know, I haven't instituted any genocides lately. So I'm doing all right. I'm a pretty good person. And the problem is that at the end of the day, we're supposed to be comparing ourselves just to one person, and that's Jesus Christ. That's the great yardstick that we have to compare our own lives to. And so we look and we see that Jesus is giving us this new commandment. But it's not really new except in one aspect. Jesus says, love one another as I have loved you. Now, in the Old Testament, it talks a lot about loving your neighbor as yourself, sort of the golden rule. But it's an imperfect rule because the idea is that if we're loving others as we love ourselves, well, we're only measuring it against our own love. And some people don't love themselves very much, which is a problem in and of itself. And then that doesn't get translated to another. Jesus is asking us to love one another as he has loved us. That is to say, with a perfect love. A love that we'll never quite reach, but as we continue to aspire to it, we'll continue to see how much further we have to go. In other words, it's an ongoing process, something that we never really arrive at, something that we're always striving towards. And this is an important thing to accomplish because notice that Jesus is giving us this idea just as he's about to leave this world. This happens right when Judas is about to betray Jesus, and Jesus is about to go into his Father's kingdom. But he's saying then that the way to keep him around is through love, that his presence is found in our love for one another. Now we ask, isn't Jesus also present in a very real way in the Eucharist? Well, exactly. And that's why the Eucharist is called the sacrament of love. And Jesus also says that before you approach the altar of sacrifice, you have to make good with your brother or sister, that you have to patch things up to find that way of loving, because we can't love unless we've forgiven. Now, we all have somebody in our lives or some people in our lives that we find it impossible to love, that we have great feelings of resentment that maybe have hurt us a great deal. But those are the exact people that we're called to make amends with and to forgive. It doesn't mean getting in touch with them necessarily. It means in our hearts being able to forgive that person. That's what Jesus is asking us to do. And Jesus never just tells us to do something. He shows us how to do it. He never asks us to do anything that he doesn't do himself. So, that's why when Christ is on the cross, he looks at the people that are about ready to kill him, that have nailed him to the cross, and he asks his Father to forgive them. He finds the way to forgive his persecutors, in order to give us an example of how to forgive ours. So the question is, who has nailed us to our cross? And who do we need to forgive in our hearts before we approach the altar? When we find that person or those people, those are the ones that we're called to love. Jesus said that, what credit is it to love those who love us? Even the pagans do that. But we're Christians when we love our enemies. Now, that doesn't mean having warm and fuzzy feelings about those who have harmed us. Far from it. Because our feelings are things that we don't actually have control over. Forgiveness, like love and like joy, is an act of the will. It's a choice. So, I always advise people that the best way to begin to forgive somebody who's harmed us is to pray for them. Because even if you have still bitter feelings, those feelings that we don't necessarily have control over, we've made the conscious choice, the part that we do have control over, to pray for their good. Because to pray for somebody is to wish for their salvation. The great saints understood this. You know, St. Patrick was enslaved for years in brutal slavery in Ireland. And he had come from a noble British family, or noble Roman family in Britain, and had been captured. Well, when he escaped back to Rome, he could have come back to have revenge on those who had enslaved him. But his only thought was to find that person that had enslaved him for his salvation, to convert him to Christianity. So rather than try to have that revenge, he went after his soul and gained it for God. And of course, we know the rest of the story, that St. Patrick converted the entire island of Ireland. So that little spark of forgiveness and of love had an enormous effect on the history of the world. And so, God's will is that we find that love for all those around us, even those most difficult to forgive. And if we do that, if we can take up our cross and follow His example of forgiving our persecutors, of loving those who hate us, then that's what really sets us apart as Christians. And we'll find ourselves a lot more at peace in this world. And when we come before God in the kingdom of heaven, it'll be a slam dunk.